The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Nights Radio. Well, you're on the air today. It's open line through till 1 o'clock. Call 66 13 68. Text or WhatsApp on 166 177. Email studio@manxradio.com. It was DHSC yesterday with Tim O'Neill, the Chief Officer, and the Minister, Claire Christian, MHK. What do you make of what you heard yesterday? That and anything else? The Minister, and indeed Mrs. Cope last week, said a new health record system is required. This is GAS 313. Health spent millions on the hospital Medway patient administration system, which can be integrated with the EMIS GP systems to share patient data. You've lost me, GAS, but I'm taking it as read. Always an excuse. No money, no staff, building too small, or we need a new system, says that. If you've got any thoughts on what was said yesterday, obviously there was a question of deja vu because Theresa Cope, the chief exec of Manxcare, was sort of following the same line in that there's less of a service nowadays than there used to be. Now, we don't know what the reason is, whether there are more people than there used to be, whether there's a pinch point in the system, they haven't got enough money, buildings too, whatever it is. We, at the end, realise if you try and get a GP appointment or you try and get a dental appointment, you'll soon know where the problem is, or indeed if you are waiting for treatment for a chronic condition or you're on the list for a new hip or whatever it is, you'll know where the issue is. On the other side, well, I just wonder what you make of any explanations that are giving and if it affects you. David's first with us today. Hi, David.
Hi, Andy. Well, yesterday I got my a letter through the post from the government to the occupier. This is my census form. They didn't even know what my name was.
Strange, isn't it? You would have thought they could, what's it called, a mail merge, where they get all the details through and put it into something that addresses envelopes and puts them on letters.
Yeah, but I thought we were going to get a form. I only opened it because it came a couple of days ago, like, and I opened it yesterday thinking the form was there ready and everybody's saying, yeah, Friday you've got to get this done, whoever's in the house, put them all down there. And the first thing, there's no form in it at all. All that goes on about, if you want to do this by electronic means, well, I would say at least a third of the population in the Isle of Man is not into the internet or filling online to put security passport in the ID code. Yeah. And they give you a unique code. Now, if that unique code or this letter went to the occupier somewhere else, somebody else could have used that, couldn't they?
Well, I mean, somebody somewhere must have thought this through. I'm taking the census. Will that be Cabinet Office?
No, it doesn't say that. It's got its own office. It's the Census Office.
Right.
Down the railway station near the steam trains. Well, maybe they've got a couple of old computers down there working on it. It gives you the telephone number if you need some help, but I would think there's a lot of people may not be panicking, or they think they've got these envelopes there, they're going to open them up the next day or two and find the form is there. Do you remember the form you used to fill in?
Yeah, crikey, yes. That was a good night's work, that was, at one time.
And this is only an intermediate census, yeah, isn't it? Not a big full one.
And the thing is, I'm just wondering, why are they doing an intermediate census? Because normally they're done every 10 years. So what's changed?
Well, what will change is a new government. And the other thing is, while I'm on to my battery's full, if those don't want to know. And the other issue is I've got is that we should be having the DEFA minister in and asking the minister there to say to him, you were going to bring a scheme on. Somebody reminded me the other day of the new energy scheme that was going to come forward.
That's
do you remember
right.
that?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I remember it being mentioned.
To help us out. Well, where is it? Has anybody applied or been turned back? You know, I keep whinging about the light bulbs, and we're past that, aren't we? Insulation material for the loft and stuff like that. We need to be looking at batteries for the your solar system or more energy efficient. I've actually getting some, and it's coming from, sorry to say this, China, vertical turbines.
Oh, really?
So I've got some information coming. So I'll be on the Chinese list, I suppose. They'll be looking at me and thinking, where does he live?
So tell me, when your batteries are full, how long can you run the house on your batteries?
Well, yesterday, the good weather's on at the minute, so I've been running the batteries till the following morning, believe it or not.
And what's that ever? The television, cooker, the kettle and what have you?
Yeah, kettle, tea type, you know, brewing up and stuff like that. But, you see, if they would educate us in the Isle of Man, if we have these government departments and have, if you could apply for a battery through the government system, do you think how much the savings would be for individuals who are got their own homes and stuff like that? Even some of the local authorities, including our own in Onchan here, are putting PV panels on the roof of certain dwellings. Because we're looking forward to, aren't we?
Yeah.
We've got a sheltered unit out there, which we're waiting for government money to come along from Treasury, which makes me panic a little bit, to say, you know, we want the refurbishment of Springfield Court. I was there on Monday talking to some of the residents, and the first thing they say to us, we've been promised this for 6 years, 7 years probably, and it's not down to the local authority, it's down to government pushing or getting the schemes pushed forward. I don't know, but it's. I'm glad to see too that the clock's back in Ramsey.
Oh yes, I hear Mr. Flint has been reinstated.
Yep. Well, we're interested to find out what went on, or did they get an apology? Because a lot of things happen, don't they? You know, they accuse this, that, and the other. I've been accused of several things over the few years like that. But when it comes down to things, when they delve down into it, nothing's happened.
Mm.
But do you get an apology? No.
Well,
all you get is social media having a go at you.
All right, we'll find out. All right, back to the solar panels. Good to hear from you. Thanks for that. Well, this new sensor, actually, there's a question about that. One came in on the answer phone. I think it's Mike. I think it's his third question.
Hi, Andy, it's Mike here. I work along Mary Veg quite often. I've got a mobility scooter, actually, just a nice little. Now, they planted the forestry planted all trees in the fields near Mirneybank. And what we've noticed, obviously, is that a lot of the trees are getting overwhelmed by grass. They put cages around the trees. The fir trees seem to be doing okay, but all the others seem to be getting choked off with all this grass. So I wonder, does the forestry or whoever's responsible to go around, or can they get volunteer groups to go around and do all this? Sadly, neglect. Next thing, the census. Just received a letter from the census, and I've noticed if you need to get in touch with them, you can do order a paper copy or whatever. And it says lines open from the 26th of April. Well, just 26th of April is a Sunday. Are they going to? They want to save money. Are they going to be employing people on over? I assume they'll be paid overtime. The third thing, I'm not quite sure. How do they ensure that everybody, with the influx of people coming into the island, how do they assure them that they fill the census forms in? What sort of checks done? Anyway, thanks. Bye now.
That's Mike. Thank you, Michael. And regarding the census, Pammy dropped a note in just to say nobody in Manx history has ever been prosecuted for not filling in a census form. Is that true? It feels like a pointless exercise, as anyone here illegally is unlikely to declare themselves, a waste of time. The old police station in Castletown will remain empty until it collapses. Well, it'll be a long time. It's very well built. No investor will commit to a project with so many conditions on alterations, both inside and outside the building. Heritage is important. Taxpayers may soon face large costs to maintain a list of buildings that developers are unwilling to take on. That's a story regarding the police station in Castletown. Bringing caravans onto the Isle of Man, there's a thing called the Towed Caravan Permit Scheme. Anybody wishing to bring a caravan onto the Isle of Man must have a permit authorising them to tow it on roads under the Towed Caravan Permit Scheme. Did you know this? The scheme applies both to visitors and residents with criteria. Visitors have to obtain a permit, and you must have a return ferry booking for the caravan within 12 weeks of arrival. Evidence will be required, and you must be staying at an approved campsite while on the Isle of Man. These are for towed caravans. And as a resident of the Isle of Man, you will be unable to import a caravan onto the Isle of Man on a permanent basis. If you own a caravan that's already based on the island, you may leave and return with it to enable a period of travel elsewhere. Under these circumstances, a caravan may also be replaced while you are off island, and you have to apply to caravan@gov.im with all sorts of details, evidence of your ferry booking, travel arrangements, the location of your caravan, where it's going to be based on the Isle of Man. Did you know about this? A text of 535 said, I wonder about the rules. In the 1980s, if somebody wanted to bring a caravan to the Isle of Man, they had to apply to the planning department with details of where it would be kept. It had to be stored under cover and not visible. The letter allowing the caravan to be imported had to be shown when boarding the boat. If this is no longer the case, perhaps it should be reintroduced to help tidy up the Isle of Man. I wonder where you stand with caravans. I got a message in from Audrey and Barry, who did live on the Isle of Man, now live on the Wirral. Their son lives on the Isle of Man. They wanted to bring a caravan that they'd stored previously on the Isle of Man. So I wonder what you think about caravans, freestanding towed caravans, this is freestanding caravans on the Isle of Man. And where you actually buy them on the Isle of Man. Does anybody actually sell freestanding caravans on the Isle of Man? This towed caravan permit system. Any thoughts on that? And a message in from Max, who says, is it true the Chinese are coming to the TT? It is. There's going to be a major Chinese manufacturer making a debut on the Isle of Man this year. It's called CF Moto, making its Isle of Man debut this year. The British sports bike team Moto 12 are bringing the CF Motos this year. CF Moto have kind of grown recently, and they enjoyed world champion success in Moto 3 with David Alonso in 2024, I think it was. So the Chinese are coming to the Isle of Man for the TT. Well, everybody remembers, or if you're old enough, you remember when the Japanese came and stationed themselves in Onchan in the 1950s. And the stated aim was to win the TT, because that would put them on the map where all this is concerned. Mike's with us now. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Yeah. In regard to Mary Vag, the plantation.
Yeah. Is it being that so the trees are being overgrown by the grass?
They are, yeah. I spoke to Mr. Neil at the forestry, who's in charge, and he says that there'll be a team starting in May. To weed and to get rid of all the grass and what have you.
Is that because you brought it up, or were they going to do it anyway?
Well, this is, I don't know. I mean, I did try to phone them yesterday, and I left a message that I was probably be on Manx Radio. Could be a coincidence. Who knows? But I did suggest, well, why don't you get some, the voluntary groups in, because but anyway, they're going to look at it. So, beginning of May, there'll be people.
And these are going to be government workers, paid workers, who are going to be doing it.
Like you put, you point out, you can't have volunteer groups using weekly and what have you.
Okay.
Once it's maintained, once it's been done, perhaps get voluntary groups around to pull the grass out and different things.
Right.
Anyway, okay. So that's I'm happy with that.
Good. All right. What was the name again at the forestry?
Mr. Neil.
Mr. Neil. Okay. All right. Appreciate that.
Blondes.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
All right. Good to hear from you. Thanks, Mike.
Hi. I think the chairman of appeal commissioners should be the one that should be investigated. I think he's acting and has been acting, and the rest of the male population have been acting as very misogynistic. And I think it's appalling that she wasn't allowed to take an MHK in with her to be interviewed. I think the whole thing is disgusting. And it's obviously been going on for years, listening to former women who have been on Peel commissioners. Thank you.
Any thoughts? That's a message from the answer phone. Remember, the answer phone is open whenever Manx, whenever Man in Line's not on air. So 682-631 is the number you call out of hours. When we're on air, of course, it's 66-1368. Well, the UK government said it was unable to recommend the Isle of Man's assisted dying bill for royal assent. The UK's Deputy Prime Minister, David Lammy, said they needed clarity. Needed clarity on the arrangements for monitoring assisted deaths, safeguards against coercion, and ensuring individuals have capacity to make decisions. As a result, it's the UK's government view that these matters must be addressed in order for the bill to comply with the European Convention on Human Rights. Got any thoughts on it? Text, email, call, WhatsApp. June's with us now. Hello, June.
Hello. Hello, Andy.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Well, I would just like to say a really big thank you. I did organise a fundraiser in the last village hall last Saturday to raise money for the window fund in the local church, in St Mary's Church. We're having windows taken out from the gallery, which the gallery has closed off for the public, and we're putting them into the main church. And this is just wonderful. We raised £2 short of £500.
Very well. How did you do that?
I did a tabletop sale in the village hall and had stall holders. That's without their money. They were individual for their own, you know, charity or right, whatever.
And how much does the fund need? Do you know, June?
Oh, we need 20,000.
Oh, good grief.
Plus. There's nobody on the Isle of Man that can do, you know, the specific work that needs doing on stained glass windows.
Right.
So we have to get people from outside the island to do the job.
And how far have you got towards 20,000?
Well, we're counting the pennies. But, you know, every bit helps, doesn't it?
You need one of those thermometers, don't you? Yeah. You know those thermometers they put outside a church with a target that they're going to raise? That's what you need.
Oh, right. So can you organise me to have one of those?
No, you better do
it.
Okay.
It's worth asking.
And tell me when you've done it. Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right, good to hear from you. Thanks for that. And Juwan's joining us now. Hi, Juwan.
Oh, Andy, I must have been too edgy for you yesterday. You didn't put me on.
Well, I'm terribly sorry. We normally roll the red carpet out, but, you know, when other people are there, you know, you have to wait your turn.
Oh, I was waiting from 12:10 onwards, but you jumped the queue on a few calls. But never mind. We're here today, aren't we? We're here today. But unfortunately, Claire can't answer the questions that I wanted to pose.
And what were they?
I mean, I'm going to go through a few now. But Professor Tim O'Neill, isn't it? The guy that was with her. So he's now the chief administration, is he? I don't think has he got any medical background, or is he just in his administration, Andy?
Haven't a clue. He was, I think, for a while, wasn't he at Manxcare for a while, and then he's gone to DHSC?
Yeah, no, I'm just looking at his background. He's like 20-odd years in child services, etc. in the UK. But nothing there about medical care. But, yeah, just a question I wanted to ask him yesterday. I'm listening to Claire talking yesterday about the immigration surcharge. And my question is, I mean, this island can move very fast if it wants to, and that was proven during COVID. Why will this administration surcharge not be brought in until the next government?
Interesting, because they're normally quite good on charging people, aren't they?
Well, this is a very interesting thing because, I mean, the people on the island at the moment are getting very, very edgy. I mean, there's a lots of, as we say, new people who are around town walking around with prams and filling playgrounds up, etc. Now, my question to the minister would have been, are these people all registered, the dependents of people coming, skilled and unskilled, that are coming to the island, are all our dependents registered with dentists here and with the NHS? Because following on from what people are talking on the programme about not being able to get medical treatment, they've paid into the system all their lives and they've been here all their lives, but then these people are coming here and are getting access to everything straight away.
Well, we don't know that, do we? We don't know whether they're getting dental treatment straight away.
And this would have been my question yesterday, Andy, to the minister. But obviously, I'm still hanging, waiting for an answer on that one. But this is what is annoying to, you know, a lot of the people on the island who spend their life here and live here as to what's happening. And maybe the government then should give some clarity as to who is actually getting paid for here and who's not. We're looking at, again, the hospice was mentioned yesterday. I think Julian mentioned the hospice. Now, we've been informed as well that there is shop floor workers, nurses, who are getting made redundant at hospice, not just administration, which, again, is very worrying. And another question I wanted to ask was the excessive rate of what they call turbo cancers in the last 4 years now, and the relevance to this with the need for the hospital. So if they're now starting to get rid of nurses, this is a problem. We have a problem here. You know, they've got an office there of people who are out there trying to get the best drugs that they can at the cheapest prices. But the system is broken, and it's still broken. So what are we going to do about this, Andy?
We got to that conclusion yesterday is that Manx Care and the DHSC know, if you like, that side of the fence. They know what the processes are. They know the challenges they face. And Tim O'Neill brought them up. You know, the fact that we have a rapidly ageing population, the fact that costs have gone up in pharmaceuticals, the costs have gone up in the labour market, you know, with the doctors and the nurses and what have you. So all those costs are, but on this side of the fence, we the people know what the problems are because we face them all the time.
It's just we've got big problems within government. Manx Care, there's issues there. It's not easy. Claire Christian's got the poison chalice at the moment, and I don't envy her one bit. But we've got. The government seemingly have left this here back door open, and we have got an excessive amount of people in here who are not working, who are dependents of people who have come here. Now, if they say people come here because we're looking for labourers and they've got unskilled, they've got unskilled jobs and manual jobs, and they bring in a wife and two children, who is paying for that? That's my issue here, because this problem will never be resolved unless we face this fact and someone comes out and tells us who and what the taxpayer is actually paying for.
Yeah, but one thing I would point out, that in terms of children of school age, our schools and certainly some junior schools need pupils. Either the roles in some schools were going down and down and down, and there were some schools that were facing closure purely because there weren't enough pupils. So if we want to keep junior schools open, some of those need children in them, and this may be one way of doing it.
I remember just on that note, I remember some time ago, Andy, not that long ago, that I was talking to a person here who had to go through like an education course on the Isle of Man of where you're going to live so you can assimilate.
Yeah.
And this person was in his 30s, had qualifications, etc., and was waiting for months. Now I'm getting told that we have translators in schools for children who can't speak our language.
I'm not aware of that. And if anybody knows that we do have translators, then please let us know.
The police are needing translators. They've asked for translators because of people who's been arrested. They need they've got problems with. They need translators. We've got translators at the hospitals for the doctors. That's fair enough. That's fair enough. We need qualified doctors, and some of them need translators. That's fine. But when we've got children in schools, if we've got special classes for children who need translators, then what is this government doing? This is my issue here. We had a guy the other day who came on, and this is not racist, it's just factual. A Nigerian guy setting up podcasts here promoting the Isle of Man and putting the light on over the Isle of Man, the best place to come. And I just asked myself, when are our doors full here? If we haven't got a health service and we haven't got everything else foundation-wise to cope with this,
presumably,
why are we putting the light on?
But presumably, remember, this is the stated aim of the government, to get the population up to 100,000, to get the working population up, to get economic growth. That's their aim, to do that. So presumably, the doors will be open for relevant and qualified people to come here until we get to 100,000, and then presumably the government will have another look at it.
But ducks in a row, surely, Andy. I mean, why would you flood your island when you've got problems already? I mean, surely you've got to put your house in order to present it to bring people over, because then your local people are going to suffer. I mean, I just, like we spoke this before about university and colleges and the College of Further Education here, and promoting these jobs within our own people, and making sure that our people have got proper housing here, so they actually they've got a quality of life that they want to come back here and live and have a skill set of some kind. I mean, the people that keep this island going are the people from likes of Williston, Pullmoe, Spring Valley, Anika. They're the working people who keep this island flowing. They're the ones that go out and fix the roads, fix your plumbing, fix your electrics. So why are we not promoting people to do these jobs? Electricians and plumbers are going to be the best paid people going shortly, the way things are going with artificial intelligence. You know, I just think we should be looking more inwardly and supporting our own people.
Okay. All right. Good to hear from you, Juan. Thanks for being with us.
Take care, Andy.
28 minutes before one, the Isle of Man's roads will become quickly congested if caravans, we're talking about towing caravans, were allowed on our narrow country lanes, says John on 557. And Lisa says, please don't allow caravans on the Isle of Man. We're talking about towed caravans. They can be unsightly, and many people struggle to tow them safely. Motorhomes seem more suitable, but caravans are not. Where can you park a caravan? Are there any camping sites where you can actually take a caravan that's towed on the Isle of Man? I mentioned there are rules under this towed caravan permit scheme that you have to follow. Any thoughts on this? And, I mean, there are the towed caravans, but also the static caravans. Are static caravans allowed on the island?
Big Red Storage in Tramode and Ronald's Way offers secure self-storage units in various sizes with ground floor options and 24/7 access. Check offers and prices using our online space calculator at bigred.im or call 640040.
Oh, June, 1 minute we're roasting hot in the conservatory and the next minute we're freezing cold.
Well, missus, you know how a hat keeps you cool in the summer and warm in the winter. Well, a solid conservatory roof from Spectrum Windows does the same job.
Great solution. Tell you what, Geoffrey needs a little bit of work on top. Do you think they could help him too?
Only if they've started selling wigs.
Transform your conservatory with a Guardian or UltraFrame solid roof. Visit Spectrum Windows, the showroom, Derby Road, Ramsey, or call 817777.
Simply Income Protection from Kestrel Insurance. A choice of benefits. Simple underwriting and peace of mind with a regular income for up to 2 years if you're unable to work due to illness or injury. Kestrel Insurance is registered with the Isle of Man Financial Services Authority.
Carpetland, the carpet specialist with the island's best value carpets in stock, often fitted within a week. Furnitureland, for three-piece suites, dining and living room furniture, and a selection of amazing beds. Carpetland and Furnitureland, West Street, Ramsey.
Love a proper country pub with superb food, great drinks, fantastic atmosphere and a warm welcome? Then you'll love the Ginger Hall in Selby. From fabulous Sunday roasts and succulent steaks to pizza, chicken wraps and delicious desserts, there's something for everyone at the Ginger Hall in the pub or our restaurant. Our new menu is online and Facebook. Booking is highly recommended, so reserve your table at gingerhall.im. And why not stay over in one of our 8 ensuite hotel rooms? The Ginger Hall, country pub, restaurant and hotel.
Heating oil for homes, powering farms and businesses, keeping you moving with petrol stations across the island. Ellen Vannin Fuels. Call us on 84 4000.
If you've got a wild side, then you might like Wild Thing, the programme which looks at the wilder side of life on the Isle of Man. Join me, H, on Tuesday evenings just after home run for a look at the wonderful flora and fauna, from dubs to dolphins, wildlife in your veg plot, to wildlife from the prom at 2 a.m. on a Saturday. We get out in the field with people who are passionate about the life you can find all around us, if only you know where to look. Wild Thing, Tuesdays just after 6:30, and available as a podcast via the Max Radio website or your usual podder provider. Get wild with Wild Thing. Yes, I was joking about the prom.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
25 to 1 now. It's a Tuesday afternoon, live from Douglas in the Isle of Man. I agree with the earlier message about the old police station in Castletown. I wonder how much Manx National Heritage paid for it. It seems likely they'd have a strong influence over any development, meaning a developer would need to be very patient and face restrictions. It would require government support, surely, to make any product viable. I think it was about £250,000 or so, wasn't it, that was paid. Isn't the whole point of the census to establish who lives where? In that case, using to the occupier makes sense, as people may have moved since the last one, says Sarah. And Peter, on 528, the world moves quickly, and to keep up, we may need more of censuses, especially regarding population. It's changed a lot in the last 5 years, yet statistically it hasn't. From what I can see, we need accurate facts. Well, certainly, post-COVID, times really, really changed, didn't they? A lot of people had enough of being on the island during COVID and left, and lots of people had enough of being elsewhere and came to the Isle of Man. It will be nice to know. My dad's house must have been classified as empty at the last census, says 622. The code didn't work. And after a call, somebody came to arrange a visit to complete a physical form, but never came back. He hasn't been prosecuted. I wasn't recorded either. Feels like the census is no longer accurate, with significant under-recording of the current population. And thank you to Alan, who said, what's going to happen if somebody or a household simply doesn't bother to fill it in? What happens to HMOs, houses of multiple occupation? Does each occupant get a census form, or does the person who owns or runs an HMO get a form and they have to fill it in? I think we need answers to get an accurate record. Andrew's with us now. Hello, Andrew.
Hi there, Andy. Please, a follow-up to the bus driver strike.
Yeah.
Do we know, please, how many bus drivers there actually are? And I'm led to believe there were 80-odd who voted, and there were 30-something who voted against. And how many of those who voted against are now actually back at work? Because I've been told that a number of them are now on sick leave, collecting full pay because they didn't agree with the terms.
Well, we'll try and find out from that. Can you tell us how you know this?
From a very good source, that's
okay.
All I can say.
Okay, all right, you're there. Protect your sources, that's fine. Yep. It will be interesting to know.
Separately, Julian there talking about interpreters, I'm also led to believe, so maybe somebody can confirm this or not, that at Balcombe School, there is now a prayer room laid out for people of other religions, particularly Muslim. So why aren't there if that's so, why are there not prayer rooms, in inverted commas, for people of other faiths, such as Hinduism and Judaism and Christianity? Leave that one hanging as well, please, Andy.
No, right. Well, that's not officially being confirmed. We don't know that for a fact yet.
Well, I know from somebody who works there.
Right.
I was informed. So, okay. Cheers now.
Okay, thanks for calling today. This is a message to those who oppose the assisted dying bill, says Pat on 223, perhaps. They should visit somebody in hospice care with late-stage terminal cancer and can see the reality of a person in severe pain despite medication, then consider whether that is a dignified death. And Ian said, regarding the assisted dying bill, I feel the Manx Duty of Care group, described as an informal grouping of healthcare professionals, are in the wrong role. It's difficult to understand how anybody can watch somebody with a terminal illness suffer when they wish to end things peacefully. Text to 696, I was in Liverpool and saw the large wind turbines turning even though there didn't seem to be any wind, or at least not enough to move them. How does that work?
Hello. Before Christmas, I emailed the Health Minister about what had happened to the questionnaire on making payment of care fees fairer. She replied very promptly, which was good, and informed me that 93% of the respondents wanted change, so it's obviously a big issue. And the reply included, the department is currently finalising the documents required to take the proposals forward to Tynwald. We aim to have the necessary approvals to go back to Tynwald in early 2026, so the debate on the next steps take place during this administration. So I'm wondering, you know, how far has this got, and hopefully it won't be lost yet again in the mists of changing administrations, because I feel it's a massive issue that people are living in fear because the rules around payment also are so smoke and mirrors, basically. Seems to be a lot of secrecy around it. And really, the rules should be crystal clear. They should be set out somewhere. And secondly, you know, I'm worried that this huge issue is once again going to get kicked into the long grass. Okay, thank you. Bye.
Well, does that affect you, and have you got any thoughts on it? By all means, do get in touch. I wonder. Text, email, call and WhatsApp on Man in Line today. Let's go to Julian, I think, who's with us. If I can just clear that up regarding the prayer room. It was in 2021, I think it was, reported there were hopes for a multi-faith prayer room at Ballacameen, but that was reported as a proposal, so not proof that a dedicated Muslim-only prayer room was actually created, according to the Alamein government plan. Records, Ballacameen has had a Christian prayer room approved as part of a registered building consent dating back to 2013. So not verified. And Julian's on now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. How you doing? All right?
I wish I were outside in the sunshine, but apart from that, okay.
Yeah, I've just been out on the bike. A bit cool breeze, but it's lovely out there. Just nice out. A few layers and all's good. Just quickly on the assisted dying thing, it's kind of funny at the moment because obviously when I spoke to Claire Christian, there are problems with the funding for hospice. So there's still, as far as I know, even though it was passed by Tynwald, assisted dying, there's still no costing and there's still no kind of how it's going to be done, you know, how people will have the process.
This has been a question that's been asked on Man in Line many times. I don't want to be morbid about it, but how's it going to be done and who's going to do it? And bearing in mind that Manx Care have said they didn't want anything to do with it, several doctors didn't want anything to do with it, who's put their hand up to say, we'll take on this responsibility? Because we could be in danger of passing a bill or an act that nobody's going to do anything about, because, you know, somebody has to. It's a distasteful subject, but it does have a practical aspect, and as it stands at the moment, we don't know where we stand.
Well, the other practical aspect is the people that are in hospice have paid taxes all their life, they get to this stage and the hospice gets a quarter, I think, of its funding. The rest is from charitable donations,
it is,
as far as I remember. So is that going to be the same for assisted dying? Is it just going to be a quarter of whatever it costs is going to be from the government and the rest from charitable donations? Because otherwise it's not an equal choice, is it? Because everyone's talking about choice.
Yeah, we don't know. So up until now, this has been a hypothetical political exercise, a private member's bill, which we know, some people would say just is a bit of a wish list. You know, we think we'd like this, we want it, let's put together the politics and then we'll sort it out afterwards. Well, surely That's kind of putting the cart before the horse.
Yeah, and then the other thing is, I mean, how much money does it cost to go through the bill? And now it turns out that whoever was writing it in the AG's office never kind of thought that they needed to have the actual gubbins of the safeguards in the primary legislation. It's like, no, no, it's all right, bro, we'll do it in the secondary legislation, is kind of how it looks like. So, of course, you've got to double up now and spend even more of our money getting lawyers to write it correctly.
And what sort of reputation does that give us at Westminster by the fact we've sent a bill that we thought was, you know, oven ready and ready to go and what have you, just add water, and they said, no, not really.
I know. Speaking of legislation, by the way, I noticed there's quite a few roads in Douglas are starting to have 20 mile an hour signs put up. I'm just wondering what the definition of pause is, and would it not have been polite to have actually let us know that it's on unpaused or whatever you'd call it? I don't know, perhaps Tim Crickall or Anne Corlett might like to say exactly what is the scope of this now. Is it going to be what they said and we're going to have the whole of Douglas, more or less, and Onken and Colby and Port Erin and everything else? Is this the same thing and they're just going to roll it now quietly? Or, you know, is it been de-scoped a bit like the horse tram rails? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, and remember, the constabulary have said they're not in a position to enforce it. So If we have speed limits, surely, you know, there has to be a mechanism whereby, you know, transgressions can be enforced and sanctions applied. But if the police say nothing to do with us, what does that say?
Well, the statistics don't bear out the requirement for it. But, I mean, this is probably the most deeply unpopular decision that I think they've ever done. So I don't know. It's it would be nice to have some sort of public statement. What is the scope of what they're doing now? Is it quietly just rolling out what was going to happen before? Is it been de-scoped? Is it just going to be some side roads? I understand Hildersley Road, Selborne Road and Selborne Drive, various roads around around Douglas. I mean, nice to get the details, so at least we know what's coming.
Okay, all right.
Anyway.
Thanks, Julian.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, good to hear from you. Thanks for that. Next Monday, Tim Johnson is on, the Minister at Department for Enterprises, on, along with his Chief Officer, Andrew Stewart. Tim Johnson and Andrew Stewart. Next Monday, 27th, Wednesday, 29th, that's a week tomorrow, the Chief Minister's on. Alfred Cannon, MHK, will be on Wednesday, 29th. And Duan asked about DEFA. Claire Barber's going to be in, the DEFA Minister, Claire Barber, MHK, and Chief Officer Tim Cowsill will be on in on May the 18th. And also in May, Nick Kay, Nick the Pharmacist, is going to be back. Always lots to talk about when Nick's on, and we're getting back to the schools as well, Ramsey Grammar School on Thursday, 21st. How much has the Peggy cost so far? Says this texter, the repairs were said to be around £5 million. For the Peggy, this famous antique yacht of ours, and it was meant to be returned, but it hasn't happened yet. Has the work been completed, and is it now being stored? Well, the figure of about £5 million relates to the estimates for returning the historic vessel Peggy to Castletown and providing a suitable facility, not the cost of routine repairs alone. According to a report from us in 2021, Manx National Heritage indicated that the full project to return and house the vessel would cost north of £5 million. more than £5 million. And that figure was part of an early planning discussion rather than the final approved budget. The question of storage, it's known the boat's been kept in a controlled conservation environment while the work's carried out. No verified public confirmation that this is being provided free of charge. So we don't know where Peggy is. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. And we don't know how much it's cost. But apart from that, we're really in the picture. The Alamander Sister Dying Bill for Royal Assent this time didn't get it. And of course, it is one of the polarising issues on the Isle of Man. Two camps, those for a sister dying, those against. Graham McCall is a retired GP, founder of the group Manx Duty of Care, which he describes as an informal grouping of healthcare professionals who are opposed to assisted dying.
I think the fundamental reason for our opposition to the bill is coercion of the vulnerable. So we're worried that coercion can be so hidden and so subtle, and it can even be self-coercion, that actually helping people through their suicidal ideas is so much more important to protect them from those than to helping them to proceed. We might prevent suffering for a few near the very end of life, the few for whom palliative care doesn't work, and yet others will suffer. Lives will be needlessly shortened. We can't give good, decent prognoses for 6 months, a year. We're getting it wrong all the time. So there's lots and lots of concerns.
The coercion side of things as well is something, is one of the three main points that the Ministry of Justice came back on, yes, that it wanted a bit more clarity on. And so is there anything that could be changed about the bill that would make you feel more comfortable with it?
Anything which makes the bill safer, of course, is good. But fundamentally, we don't think this can be made really safe. And we think it's going to fundamentally change the relationship between doctors and social care workers and their patients. It's going to take away the trust. It's going to change the whole nature of the health service. So, yeah, it'd be great if we could eliminate coercion. It'd be fantastic. But can we do it? We don't think you can.
The MOJ did say that it should not be interpreted as disallowing royal assent, yes, was, I think, quite a key sentence. And this has gone through our political, yes, system in the way that it should have done.
It has.
Is there not a point at some point where you have to accept that is what is going to happen?
Listen, this is a democracy and we all respect the rule of law. So if something becomes law, then of course we should respect it. But of course, until that moment that something becomes law, well, yeah, fight tooth and nail for it. And I have a real sense that, you know, as a GP, if I had a patient who was suicidal, and of course what they need at those moments is protection. And here we are, I slightly feel, yeah, you know, come on, Isle of Man, let's not be suicidal. You know, that basically the UK is actually, we're a Crown protectorate. The Crown is actually, funnily enough, trying to protect from ourselves. It's a strange situation to be in.
That's retired GP Graham McCall. So for many of those against assisted dying, the decision from the UK government came with as a renewed sense of hope. But what about those who have tirelessly campaigned in favour? And of course, on Man in Line in the past few years, we've heard for and against. Well, for it, Sue Biggerstaff, one of those. Her husband, Simon, died in 2022.
It's because my husband had motor neurone disease. It was really about the end, though. He had a very aggressive form of MND and he was paralysed from the neck down within 2 months. And eventually he developed what we thought was a bed sore. And this just got worse and worse and worse. And Simon was in so much pain. And what I was eventually told is that his body was decomposing while he was still alive. So despite having a driver in each arm and each leg delivering pain relief, as well as a cocktail of drugs going through a peg in his stomach, they couldn't stop the pain. He had to sit up because otherwise he would have choked, couldn't breathe. And he did eventually ask the doctor if he could have his food stopped. But that takes a month for you to die of starvation. But that is perfectly legal. You can do that. How this is right, I'll never know. Sadly, he died 2 weeks later. But those last 2 weeks, he shouldn't have had to endure. Nobody should have had to endure it. When he kept saying, make it stop, we should have been able to make it stop and we couldn't. And the fact he'd chosen to starve shows how bad it was.
And I'm just so sorry that that was something that you both had to go through and that he had to live through. And all of that history then makes this news even more emotive, I suppose, for you.
When I first heard, I'll be honest, I just I burst into tears. And I feel like every delay means more people are going to suffer and more families like mine are going to have to watch their loved ones suffer, which is just, it's horrible. But since receiving the news, I've been led to believe this is not the end and that hopefully our government can work with the adjacent aisle and get this through. And I really don't understand why our government voted this in. It was the will of the people. It went through and then we have to rely on royal assent from over there. And I know it's because we're a Crown dependent, but it seems so wrong.
Any thoughts on this? Text, email, call and WhatsApp.
When the man in line's not on air, call Manx Radio to leave your opinion for broadcast on 682 631.
The latest edition of Manx Radio's Breath Mindfulness podcast with Karen Hardman is available now.
Tension in the shoulder blades and the back of your neck. Let that release.
Brought to you by the Good Health Store on Station Road in Port Erin.
You see a cosy cabin in the distance, nestled among the trees. You notice all the intricate details, so you won't forget. It's too magical.
The latest in the Breath Mindfulness series with Karen Hardman and available now at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
6 minutes before one, Harry said, Andy, it's getting more difficult to find a parking spot lately. We went to Peel yesterday and found lots of electric charging points where you could park. Many of them were empty. This encourages people to park on yellow lines or to park inconsiderately. Peel must be losing customers. And it's probably the same across the Isle of Man. People should charge at home. And if they can't because they're unable to have a charger, they should reconsider buying an electric vehicle. Well, again, it's the government's stated aim to encourage EV ownerships, and that's why these chargers are appearing. How is it I tried to get a doctor's appointment on the 17th of February at RGP for a new medication review for mental health and an injury, including a tingling left arm? The 12th of March appointment was cancelled, then the 6th of April cancelled by text less than an hour before. I'm booked for the 27th of April, said Sue. If it happens. I have B12 injections every 10 weeks. This is Jerry. I always book 2 weeks in advance. Last time, I was told to try a chemist for the injection, but the chemist said they don't provide it and suggested I go private, which is a cost to me. What's happening? Regarding Texter 068, regarding a sister dying, I thought doctors were, quote, meant to do no harm. Forcing a terminally ill person who's suffering greatly to stay alive could be seen as causing harm. That's 068's view. And 23, Texter 223 said, before hospice was established, people with terminal illnesses were cared for in Nobles Hospital until they passed away. My father was one of them and spent 4 weeks in sedation. At that time, the DHSS covered the cost and care. So why can't hospice now be fully funded from the national insurance contributions? So, Texter 557 said, I waited on the phone for half an hour yesterday but didn't get through. Manxcare says it operates at arm's length from government. So the minister can't interfere. However, why are Manxcare roles handled by Isle of Man Government HR? Why are staff paid through the government and receive government pensions? I think because it's an arm's length. Remember, this was a kind of agreed at the time that we should get politicians out of the day-to-day of running health and social care. So politicians, if you like, couldn't pull favours or say, you know, my constituent needs to get this or needs to get that. So we agreed that Manx Care was a good idea. Now we've got it. Do we have to make the most of it or is it time for a rethink? Remember, there is an election. That's it. Thanks to Chris on the phones today. And thanks for your contributions. Open Line, Man in Line, back tomorrow at 12 midday. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday.
WINT